All right, guys. And so we're back for our podcast on going deeper. This is actually our take two.
Yeah.
Because we recorded one. So it's just so that everybody knows, because this last Sunday that just passed, we had Alan Cristales from Nazarene Compassionate Ministries at the church for both English and Spanish services in Oakville. But the week before, we actually had Marg Stahlbaum, who leads a group that goes to Eswatini for missions. She was actually sharing the week before in Cambridge. So what happened was, I was in Cambridge this Sunday that just passed, and I preached the message from
the previous
week. So it actually sort of works out that today we get to talk about that message, about teach. And so, yeah, let's get into it.
Let's do it.
So first things first, I guess let's just read over the verse one more time. And so we are in 2 Timothy chapter 2. So I usually read in the Lord's version of New King James Version. Right? But I'll read today. You know what? I was reading it in the New Living Translation. And so I'll read it over in the New Living Translation just to see if it has a little bit of a different connotation. And it says this. This is Paul talking to Timothy, right? And he says, "Timothy, my dear son, be strong through the grace that God gives you in Christ Jesus. You have heard me teach things that have been confirmed by many reliable witnesses. Now teach these truths to other trustworthy people who will be able to pass them on to others." And so I guess the main idea that we started off with is the fact that first and foremost, we have to remember that Paul was the one who taught Timothy, and he took Timothy on trips, and they went and they traveled the world, and he really took Timothy on like an adoptive son. Now, the Bible doesn't ever mention Timothy's father, right?
Right.
So our understanding is that they had like a father-son relationship, right? And so he stepped in and took him on all these trips and taught him through life and life experiences. And that's what we're sort of talking about when we're talking about progress and we're talking about in vivo, the idea of real life experience. And so Paul now is saying, okay, I taught you lots of things, right? And that brings us to the question, how did he learn those things from Paul?
Timothy?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, obviously we spent a lot of time with him, and Paul took him around in his missionary trips, right? Like a mentor. Firsthand experience, firsthand living with Paul and all that. I think that's probably one of the greatest ways of learning, right? And transferring knowledge is that, like shadowing someone. So.
Yeah, exactly. In real life experiences. And if you think about it, what are the biggest lessons that we learn in our lives? I think that more so than remembering the 3 points of a class that a professor told us, right? What really we grab onto is the real life experience that we learn from somebody else. Like something happened in our lives. Like I know there's a few specific things that I remember very, very vividly in my mind about things that I learned in my spiritual walk that really, really formed me. You know, like, for example, like I think that one of the issues that we have in ministry is learning to be able to prioritize our kids, right? And I think when the next episode of In the Gray comes out, one of the things we talk about is that we talk about the responsibility of ministry and stuff like that. And then really recognizing that God is never going to ask me to come and give accounts for other adults who aren't my family. Mm-hmm. Right. He's not going to be like he's not going to be like that person over there. You know, they made all the decisions because of you. No, he's not going to do that. Right. But he gave me children. And so I have to watch over them. I still remember one time how my grandfather modeled it to me was that when we were kids, the way that he would sort of remember us and remember our growth, it's a little strange, I guess, is that he would keep our baby teeth when they fell out, right? And so whenever one of our small teeth fell out, you know, we would bring it to him and he'd give us money.
Right.
Right. Yeah. And so that money was like amazing. Right. And then he'd go and he'd save them somewhere or something. Right. And it was his way of remembering our growth. And I remember one time I ran into the living room of his apartment because my grandfather had like this open door policy. Like if he was home, they never locked the door of the apartment. Like people would just walk in. Like honestly, like you could be sitting there watching TV and someone would walk in.
Yeah.
Right. And I remember I just like bolted in and he was there in the living room with this couple and the lady was crying. So I'm guessing, because he was a pastor, I'm guessing he was having some sort of like a session with that couple, right? Probably had some issue. I don't know. Like I'd be making it up if I said, right? So I remember I had the tooth in my hand and I was like, I was stunned. I didn't know what to do. And then he noticed and he just said, hold on just one second. And then he got up and he acknowledged and grabbed the tooth, went into his room, grabbed me some money and gave me the money.
Yeah.
Right. And then went back. And I still remember that because for me, it was like at that moment, even for, you know, the minute that it took him to like get up, get the money, come back or whatever, and acknowledge that moment, you know, he still made me more important than that couple. Mm-hmm. And that I think is something that I carry with me, or I try to carry with me in ministry.
Yeah. So I think, number one, it was the man's fault, whoever that was counseling.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's always. Yeah. He did something wrong.
That's right. And I'm wondering, did you go back and to get more teeth out so you can get more money? Because I used to always think, man, if I get this now, maybe I take out another few and get, and cash in right now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I thought about it, but it never worked out.
No, that's super cool because, I mean, at least in our culture, at least from my experience, you know, and not just in my home, but just even growing up in a Spanish or, you know, at least maybe a little bit more older, culturally minded people, you know, kids were meant to, you stay quiet. You're with the adults. You stay quiet. You wait your turn. You know, you're probably one of the, you're probably the most insignificant in the room when adults are there. Right. And that's how so that's the kind of environment I grew up. I think the person who kind of switched that up and actually made, it sounds bad, but it's the truth, who made me think that kids are human beings too, is my wife. Because my wife had a super wonderful ability of just communicating and talking and making kids feel like a million bucks. I didn't. Like, so when I got married to my wife, that's one of the first things I think I ever learned from her is like, see kids as people too.
Yeah.
And it's so important because I imagine now, and going right back to Paul and Timothy, like even in ministry, you know, because there seems to be this tendency of, you know, the older ministers tend to look down on, maybe not all. I mean, I don't want to like, you know, broad stroke everybody, but I mean, it just, at least in my experience, I've seen it and I've experienced it, you know, like 25 or 30 year old or 50 year ministry veteran, you know, looks on a young minister up and coming or just upstart. And it's like, you get treated like, you know, in Spanish, well, never mind what, how you say it in Spanish, but you know, el estimocoso, you know, or, you know, you're just, como dice, like, how did they say it? You know, you're just coming, I'm already going back type of thing. One of those things, right? I've already been around the block several times, buddy, you know. And then I remember my mom actually was pretty good at instilling in me is it doesn't matter who is preaching because we can always learn from everybody. And it doesn't matter if it's somebody who just started ministry or somebody who's been in ministry for whatever, a quarter century or half a century. It doesn't matter. We can all learn. And I think that was super cool because when someone in ministry opens the door for you like that, it encourages you. It gives you the confidence to go forth and do that. And I'm imagine that Timothy with someone like Paul, you know, Paul, the Apostle Paul, all over the known world probably then, you know, at the majority of it anyways, his name all over the place. And here I am, you know, here's a Timothy trailing behind him and learning. And, you know, that's I commend Paul, and I also, you know, what a blessing Timothy must have had. You know?
Yeah. And sometimes, actually, now that you say that, the question is if Timothy recognized that he was with Paul, right? If he recognized that Paul was Paul.
Yeah.
Because sometimes we are with people that we could learn so much from, but if we discount them, then we're not really receiving everything that they could be teaching us, right? Yeah. If we don't learn to value what they have.
Yeah.
And I think that's important for us nowadays too, to sort of turn back and say, no, this is somebody that I can really learn from.
You know, and that's a good point, because if it is like what we've been, you know, what's suggested, that Timothy and Paul, obviously, and Paul's entourage, that, you know, they all lived together, they ate together, they, you know, they went through all the experiences they went through. You know, that's when you see the humanity of people. That's when you see the weaknesses of people. And I think as a person, if someone is my mentor, or, you know, let's say even bring it down to something very practical, you know, married couples, right? Let's say, you know, like in your case or my case, you know, or, you know, married and we're in ministry, our wives could have a choice there of, you know, seeing us as, yes, as their husbands, you know, as their regular
macho.
People, huh?
El macho
de la casa, that's right. No, or just, you know, regular people, or just, you know, human beings and all that, with all our weaknesses and frailties. But then at the same time, we're also ministers in the gospel of Jesus Christ. And how does that translate, right? Because there could be this, and I've seen it, and the only reason why I bring it up, and I think, you know, I'm in my life, I'm so concerned, because there's that opportunity for either way it can go, to kind of say, yeah, you preach that, but you don't live it. And so there's like kind of this, you lose, I don't know if the word would be respect or whatever that is, you know, that they don't take you for real or serious, right? They don't take you seriously, because what they see at home, you know, is different from what they see, you know, in front of, you know, you exercising that ministry. And you know, and that's, I think, to me is so important, you know, just what you're saying right now, and bringing it down to Paul and Timothy and perhaps the whole entourage, is Paul must have lived everything that he preached, and Timothy had that opportunity to say, Paul, you know, you lead by example, and I, you know, I open my mind, my heart to what you are saying, because I see it and I respect it. And I think I've seen throughout the years, I've seen enough where you have this, you know, this, I don't know how to say it, but
duality.
Duality, right? Where, you know, you got the person, or, you know, maybe a preacher, but obviously at home there's some weird issues going on that just doesn't coincide. You know, their kids don't believe their father, and the wife doesn't believe the husband, you know, because of how they live and how they are.
Well, and I think that's at the core of what Paul is even saying to him, because, like, I really believe the connotation here is live it first and preach it, right?
Yeah.
Because Paul also is the one who tells the Corinthians, he says, your problem, your issue is that you have a lot of teachers, you have a lot of professors, mm-hmm. right? But you have few fathers. Or in other translation, few mentors, right? Like, you have people that can teach a lesson, but you don't have people that can teach life.
Right.
And then that's when he even to the Corinthians says, imitate me, mm-hmm. right? Because he's so sure of the fact that he can live it out, that he says, imitate me. Actually live out the life that I want to show you, so that you can actually live it out too.
Yeah. And I think in what you read too, it's that whole ability of teaching is meant to be passed on, right? It's like, so if Paul taught Timothy, now Paul was exhorting Timothy, you know, keep teaching, like pass on what you've learned to others.
And that's interesting, because that's really what Jesus said himself. Like Jesus said, and if we were to paraphrase it and change it to a different language of today, he basically said, listen, I've been given all authority. So now I'm sending you guys out, and I'm telling you to go out, find people to make them into apprentices of me, so that you can take them to baptize them in my name, and then empower them to do the same.
Yeah.
And really, when we recognize, because we use the Christian word disciple, which is the right word, but a lot of people wouldn't really understand what that means, right? So when we change it and we say, okay, apprentice, like, think about it. Our job as Christians that Jesus himself told us to do was not, you know, to, I don't know, like we get caught up doing others, like good things, like all giving out sandwiches, doing this, giving out clothes. That's not our job, right? In the end, that's not our job. And it's funny because this past weekend, we had Alan Cristales from the Nazarene Compassionate Ministries. And afterwards, I met him. I finally came after the Spanish service and I met him at Montfort there for lunch, right? And well, after we ate, we just, because you know how those conversations go long and long and long and long. We were talking and it was interesting that he says, you know, one of my biggest issues is who I partner with. Because a lot of organizations, they do a lot of things similar to what we do, right? But their motivation is different. Mm-hmm. And their agenda is different. And so when their motivation is in part to push their agenda, even though they're doing the same thing, we can't do it with them, right? And he said, and it's interesting how some Christians criticize us because they just figure, like, come on, if they're going to give you food and what you're wanting to do is feed people, then it's a no-brainer, right? But he said, interestingly enough, he goes, but that is not the mission. Mm-hmm. He goes, the mission is the gospel.
Right.
The means that God has called us to spread the gospel is through compassion. He said, but compassion is just a means. The mission is still the gospel. So if the mission was compassion, then yeah, mm-hmm. you can partner with any group of any faith, of any thought, of any agenda, because the mission is food. Compassion. The mission food, is yeah. compassion,
right?
Because no, the mission is the gospel. Compassion is our specific means.
Yeah.
And I really appreciated him saying that because that shows that sometimes we forget in church and as Christians that the mission is the gospel and making apprentices mm-hmm. and getting people and teaching them who Jesus is and the relevance that it has, not just to their life today, but for their eternal life.
Yeah. You know, I think I prefer, you know, what you're saying, I prefer the word in today's context, apprentice,
yeah.
over discipleship, because unfortunately, especially in the church world, maybe not in all. I mean, I know sometimes I say the church world and it's such a broad stroke that I'm using right now, but reality is that, say, let's to put context, in the world that I've known, right, through my years, you know, in the church and in Christianity, you know, when you use the word discipleship, it's, I'm going to say, you know, a huge percentage of that is, most of it is someone teaches someone something, but not really lives that life with them
yeah.
or through it. Whereas the word apprentice, I mean, if you want to get into an apprentice, some sort of like for the trades or something, that means someone is going with you, teaching you, and then letting you do, repeat what he's done, or, you know, okay, watch me do this as I do this wiring here or this plumbing here, and then he lets the apprentice try it. Totally different. So unfortunately, that word discipleship, it's almost like, yeah, listen, I'm the teacher, you're the disciple, you sit there, you listen, I will teach you how to do it, and then, you know, we pack up our books and we walk away and you go ahead and do what I just taught you.
Yeah, and if you think about it, that would mean that even the use of our terminology, like we say a discipleship class.
Yeah, exactly.
Then it wouldn't make any sense.
Right.
How could you have a discipleship class? How right. could you change discipleship into a class structure?
Exactly.
It doesn't work, right? Because even with an apprentice, even if you're in a trade, you have your theoretical classes,
right.
which are important.
That's
so I
right.
totally agree with having classes and let's have like, let's go deep into scripture, whatever, things like that, right? But your class is not your discipleship.
Right.
It's not the apprenticeship portion of it. It's part of just filling yourself with understanding,
right.
which is important, but it's not the discipleship,
exactly.
right? And so that's why we have connect groups, but our connect groups aren't discipleship groups. They're groups where you connect to other people to walk together in community, but that gives you the opportunity of discipleship.
Yeah. Yeah, it's super important to me. I mean, it's just because it involves much more than just transmitting knowledge. It involves someone seeing at, you know, firsthand through your life what that looks like being a follower of Christ. And that just puts a lot, yeah, it sounds scary, but that's the reality. I mean, and so the beauty of it is that, you know, we're looking to Christ and he's the one who strengthens us. He's the one who gives us the ability to do so. We're not perfect, right? And then that in turn we transmit to others and then and so forth and so on. But at the end of it all, you know, it's God working through us and in us in, to do all these things. But it's a necessity.
And that I mean, I think that's a huge criticism for the way church operates in North America nowadays. The modern church operation in North America. And I don't mean the last 20 years. I mean the last 100 years. Mm-hmm. The way that we've progressed is towards a model of less and less and less relationship. Right? Because the main point of the message of teaching that we talked about was the fact that our strength does not come from our substance because we are of Christ, because we have the life of Christ, mm-hmm. you know, because greater is he who is in me than is in the world, because no longer do I live, but Christ lives in me, because all old things have passed and all things are made new, because, you know, the same spirit that rose Jesus from the dead lives inside of me. All of those verses that are catch verses that sometimes become cliche, they shouldn't be cliche because they're a reality in our lives, mm-hmm. that doesn't designate our strength because that's our substance. What designates our strength is when we recognize that we're a chain, mm-hmm. that we're a body. So really the strength comes in our connection with the chain.
Right.
Right. How well we're connected to those that we're learning from, how well we're connected to those that are learning from us, how well we're connected in community. Right. That's what really makes our strength. And so when we see the process of North American church and the way that people value church, they value church for all the wrong reasons.
Right.
Right, I'll go to a church service, which is not the church. It's just their expression on a Sunday morning, maybe if it's Sunday morning or if it's Saturday night or whatever. Right, and I show up, and I will criticize them based on their tech, the sound, their songs, the musicality, the how well the preacher is a communicator, what he said, how he said it, how good their kids program is, how great their seats are. And nowadays, unfortunately, how good their coffee was, right? How good their cookies were, right? Do they have a bakery? I'm here first time. What did they give me? Did they give me a t-shirt? Did they give me a cheap pen? Right? Like, and it's funny because people value those things so much that it's become the conversation even for pastors when they're thinking about how we present ourselves to everybody. Mm-hmm. And it becomes what's more valuable, but all of that is superficial. Because none of that, in any of that, did that include relationship.
Right.
There was no, who can I connect with to learn from?
Yeah.
You know, and for me, that's something that I think that we have completely distorted. And so then you'll go to a church and then, I love it because they have the best coffee, because they have a really nice place. There's lots of people. I'll sit down. Nobody sees me because they turn off the lights. They just put the lights on in the stage. I have a great time. Then the preacher says something really good. And then, you know, and then the hot words of anybody who's just looking for that shallow Christianity will say, oh, I finally feel like I'm getting fed.
Right, right.
But I would contend, and even though I'm a preacher and I love preaching, I actually really enjoy preaching, right? Like that's my thing. If I do it wrong, who cares? Like
that's not the point.
I'm like those people. I might be like those people who sings off key all the time, but love singing. Yeah. Right? And that's their thing. They'll sing their heart out. Maybe that's me, but the reality is that I am aware that my ability to preach will never, never supersede the transformational work of apprenticeship.
Mm-hmm.
Like nobody can judge the church until they get to know me personally, or until they get to know you personally, or until they get to know Alan personally, or Charmaine, or Leonardo, or anybody else who's on the team, or if you're a kid, how you get to know and connect with Clara, right? Like that's at the core of what really we should be valuing in church.
Right. You know, and it could it be the shallowness of church world today because of lack of that discipleship, that, you know, teaching one another in this apprenticeship, discipleship mindset or attitude, you know, because at the end of the day, it's like, okay, I got saved today. So now I'm going to go to church and dump all the responsibility at the feet of the church, whatever that church may be, you know, and it's their job now to make sure that, like you were saying, you know, that I'm fed, that I learn, that my kids are taught, you know, that my teenagers have a program so they don't go and, you know, get involved in crazy things. And it becomes the duty of the church for everything, you know, even for my own personal growth, even for my own personal, you know, like, well, what does the Lord want for me? Like, what's his will for my life? So we expect in the church to find out all these answers, when in reality, if we're not doing that, like, for example, if God has called you to missions, how will you know if you're not even doing the first things first, mm-hmm. which is, you know, as we're learning, if we've been taught, let us teach others. And then in that process, we'll begin to see that gifting or that calling or that burden, whatever, in our lives. But we got to be doing, you know, what we're supposed to be doing as the church, announcing the gospel, you know, proclaiming the gospel and teaching what we've been taught. You know, like you were saying, it's a link with a link. Now, some may want to say, well, I'm the end link, therefore I don't have to link to nobody else, right? Maybe that's what they want. I don't know. But the reality is there will never, I think we will never, for those that want to always find out what God has for my life, you're never going to figure it out until you actually start to live out first things first, which is proclaiming the gospel, you know, discipling, you know, what you're learning, teaching also.
And if anybody does think that they're the first link, let us debunk that, because first and foremost, the Apostle Paul says, imitate me as I imitate Christ. Mm-hmm. So Christ, even he recognized
right. who the
end link was.
Right, right.
It's Christ.
Yeah.
And then he also recognized that Christ is the head of the body that is the church.
Right.
So anybody who wants to live their Christian life on their own without being discipled by somebody, without being an apprentice, is completely off.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? There's something wrong with them. And actually, when you get to know them, the people that are acting like that, there is something wrong with them.
Yeah.
Because and if you're watching today, instead of commenting and making something angry just because, oh, I learn on my own, stop watching YouTube videos and go to church. and make friendships and be in community, because that's how we grow.
Right.
And so one other thing that was said for the sermon was that it's impossible to live out our Christian walk outside of community.
Mm-hmm.
Because even the fruit of the Spirit are dependent on community. How can you be patient? How can you be kind? How can you be gentle? How can you be loving to yourself? Right?
Right.
Unless nowadays everything is self-care, right?
That's right.
But no, the reality is the only way that you really show your patience is with other people.
Yep. That's right. Yep. And I think what you're saying is, I mean, how do we know even if we're growing it, or even if we have the fruit of the Spirit, you know, how do we know if we're all by ourselves locked away, you know, in four walls and saying that we're talking to God all the time, but we don't come out of the prayer closet, right, to talk to people and live with people, you know, who are God's people. How do we know we even have patience? How do you know? Like, I get it. Yes, the fruit of the Spirit, you know, because the Spirit is in us, all that is there. But I would have nothing to measure by unless I am in community.
Or listen to James, show me your faith and I'll show you my
works. Exactly. Exactly. And it becomes, so to me, I mean, I guess the two places for me that you're going to have this battleground of, you know, living out your faith, and if what you've taught, you can, it's teachable to others because it's biblical. You know, it's number one is your home life. I mean, that's a huge, I don't know for anybody else, but that's where really a lot of who you, I guess the fruit of the Spirit and Christ-likeness, it's a place where it could come out or not, right? Your kids or your wife or whoever, your significant other there, you know, just gets you in the wrong mood and says the wrong thing, pushes all the buttons, and then you have an opportunity to whether, well, what, who am I going to be? How am I going to behave? How am I going to react? What am I going to say? You know, how am I going to approach this with wisdom or just out of anger? Or so that's, I think, one of the battlefields that we have. And the other is with just in community, you know, and specifically, I'm going to say with our brothers and sisters in Christ, because, you know, that's where the Bible teaches us, you know, first, you know, with the people of faith. And then as we, you know, like our when Jesus gave the Great Commission, right? You know, first in Jerusalem, then in, you know, in Samaria, and then on the ends of the world. I mean, but it has to start within your own household, yeah. Right? So I think these are great places where, but it's in community. It has to be. With that always in your mind, you know, I've been taught, this is what I've learned, you know, biblically, I've been discipled. And if you haven't, well, get, you know, get discipled. Find someone. Who is it that you believe can pour into your life truth, then God's truth, and help you to live that out, you know? Find someone. But you cannot be alone, and your life will be like one of those crazy, you know, at the end of it, it's like, am I really a Christian? Am I, you know, is God really real? Like, why do you want to end up there? And I think a lot of the issues that happen in those kind of circumstances is because we don't have community. We're all on our own. We're trying to figure things out. We get depressed. We get whatever, lose hope. We not sure about our faith. Is God really real? And we have no one that we can have these discussions with that are truly in our circle, in our life, that are in, you know, ingrained in there, entrenched with us. I'm not talking about approaching the pastor or some minister, but they don't know you, maybe, right? Maybe they're not that connected with you, but who around you is that connected, that is doing, you know, the Christian walk with you, is entrenched with you right there? That's the person you probably better understand you and better work out whatever, you know, questions you may have.
Yeah.
You
know? I think so. I think that should be our mentality. We should first say, okay, I need my community faith. So if you don't have one and you live in Oakville, Milton, Burlington, or Mississauga, come to Generations Church, Sundays at 10 a.m. But after you have your faith community, then you need to plug in with specific people that you want to grow to be like, right? And you need to have them, you know, be able to speak into your life and learn from them. And the beauty of what the Apostle Paul says is you don't have many fathers, you don't have any mentors. It's true, not everybody will mentor you in every area of life, right? Like there might be somebody who's really good. You know what? There might be a couple. You and your wife need to hang out with that couple because they got it. They mm-hmm. got it. They, you know, they've been at it for, you know, they've been married for 30, 40 years, and they're, you know, they love each other profoundly, and they're working through everything, and you need that, right?
Yeah.
But maybe on another side, then there's another family that has kids your age, and they learned how to put it together, and then you can learn from them from there. Maybe there's somebody, you know what I mean? Like there's different people that we connect to, and we just got to learn from them. And then we got to find people that we can plug into and that we can start giving them. And maybe that person, listen, like I saw a young couple, and you know what? They're just going to have a baby and they're just going to start out. We just had, you know, our kids are a little bit older, but I remember that stage.
Yeah.
I remember how, you know, I remember, you know, natural things. Like I remember having my first daughter and then going through postpartum depression, you know, like stuff like that. Like, like being able to just step in with them and say, hey, listen, like we lived it.
Right.
Come learn from us.
Yeah.
Come over, have a coffee. Look at the way we live. Let's connect. Let's talk.
Yeah. And that you just, I think, made it so practical. Like that is right down to the practicality of what discipleship looks like. As simple as that. You know, it doesn't have to be, hey, let me invite you to a prayer meeting. You know, like I'm doing my, it doesn't have to be like that. You know, it could, but I mean, I'm saying bring it down to the practicality. You've walked through that stage in life and you've walked through it in your faith, you know, why not then that other person or that couple or whatever it may be, you know, since you've already been there, you can offer that wisdom. You can offer, you know, that help. I mean, what's wrong with that? And I think the problem might be is because I think we've said it before, unfortunately, we're very consumer-minded people where we want to consume, but we're very slow at giving what we have, you know, and just sharing what we have.
Yeah, and it comes down to just having a burden for people, loving them. And if you don't have it, pray for it, because like we really can. You know, you invite somebody to your house. Like I said, somebody who's just getting married and you know what that felt like. Invite them over for your choice of beverage, right? Yes. Hot or cold, as long as it's Christian, or that's at least right, Jesus approved.
Jesus approved, that's right.
Right? And just talk.
Yeah.
Let them know about your experiences. You know, you'd be surprised how much good that does in people's lives.
Yeah. And how much people are willing and open to hear a friendly voice, not a judgmental, just a friendly voice, a concerned voice, speak into their life. As simple as that.
Yeah. All right, guys. So Alan is distracted, so he didn't give us a time signal, but I'm pretty sure we're good. So anyway, guys, we will see you soon. Probably in this case, for going deeper, it'll probably be in 2 weeks because anybody who's following us, on the 13th of October, Thanksgiving weekend, we do have a special speaker, Pastor Diego Forero, who is part of the Cali Church of the Nazarene, Casa de Oración, that grew to over 10,000 people. And he's going to be giving a seminar on the Saturday. So he's going to be here with us on Sunday. So it's going to be a fantastic service. But because of that, we'd wait till the next in the series to go from there.
Right.
All right, guys. God bless you guys. And we're out.